Thanks for tuning in to the Drive On Podcast, where we talk about issues affecting veterans after they get out of the military. Before we get started, I'd like to ask a favor. If you haven't done so already, please rate and review the show on Apple Podcasts. If you've already done that, thank you. These ratings help the show get discovered so it can reach a wider audience. And while you're there, click the subscribe button so that you get notified of new episodes as soon as they come out. If you don't use Apple Podcasts, you can visit driveonpodcast.com/subscribe to find other ways of subscribing, including our email list. I'm your host, Scott DeLuzio, and now let's get on with the show. Hey everyone, today my guest is Bud and Sarah Dunn. Bud and Sarah host the Confident Couples podcast, where they talk about ways to strengthen relationships by working on communication, finances, and a couple's overall commitment to each other. Now, neither Bud or Sarah are veterans, which might make them seem like an unlikely choice for a podcast whose audience is primarily veterans and the people who support them. However, I recently came to learn a very interesting trend. The rate of divorce amongst actively serving military is on a whole lower than the general population. Of course, there are some demographics that vary within the military, but overall, the military does a pretty decent job at keeping spouses together. If you think about it, there are actually some good incentives to staying married while in the military. There are pay incentives, improved housing options, insurance, and other things like that. But after separating from the military, all that goes away. And with it, the divorce rates, unfortunately, skyrocket. So Bud and Sarah, welcome to the show. Why don't you tell us a little bit about yourselves and what your background is?
Hey, Scott. This is Sarah, and I'm here with Bud. And we are just an average couple from Michigan, and we like talking about relationship stuff, which is something we discovered about 2 years ago when we realized a lot of the very intentional things that we do to work on our relationship were maybe not super normal. So that's how we ended up starting the Confident Couples podcast. And we're really thrilled to be here with you, with the knowledge that we're just an average couple that love talking about relationships. And we hope that we have something good to share.
Yeah. So it took me about 2 years to talk Sarah into starting the podcast. And it's fun that now we're doing an episode like this with you, because when I wanted to get it started, the whole, you know, jumping off point for me was just sharing some of the things that we've learned with peers of ours and documenting some of the stuff that we've done, so that hopefully it'll impact somebody in a positive way. You know, we talk to people about how it's like a pizza. You eat what you like, you pick off what you don't. You don't need to use or eat the whole thing. And, you know, maybe you mold it into something different. So that's kind of some of the practices that we've gone through and some of the episodes we've done. And we're really excited. And thank you for inviting us on. And I think I'd be remiss if I didn't thank all the listeners too, for, you know, the sacrifices that they've made as civilians that we are for the country and for, you know, their fellow countrymen and women. We really appreciate all the effort that your listener and yourself have put into, you know, your sacrifices you've made as a military member.
Absolutely. Thank you. Thank you for that. And so let's kind of jump right in. So as I alluded to in the intro, married service members have a few incentives to staying married while they're serving. And these incentives aren't exactly a strong foundation for a good marriage. And I think that this is one of the reasons why those marriages tend to fall apart after leaving the military. So let's kind of start off with the basics. Let's talk about some of the foundations of a strong marriage. I think this is a kind of a good place to start, because a good foundation really is crucial to any marriage. So what are some of those basics that make up a good marriage?
Well, we have our opinion about this topic, and I should say we're not trained relationship counselors either. So these are just things that we've figured out ourselves. So we've been together for 17 years. We've been married for almost 9 years now. And we've always been very committed to a strong partnership in our marriage, thinking about the future, thinking about where we wanted to go together, and really keeping that as a priority. So It was actually advice from a friend of ours that created our three foundations of marriage that we ended up talking about on, I think, the very first episode of our podcast. And Bud's the best at explaining those, so I'll let him do it.
So the three principles are, we call it the three-legged stool, and it's communication, finance, and intimacy. And the basic concept of why we call it the three-legged stool is that you kick one leg out and it all falls over. But if you keep all legs underneath you, then you can pretty much walk through everything or anything that's challenging in your life, or, you know, your business life or your work life or your family life or anything else. So you can kind of navigate your way through it. So the first thing is communication. If you're talking to each other and you're having issues and challenges, then you can figure those things out through communication. If you're handling your money well and you know that your money's coming in and it's going out, and I want to retrench that real quick. If you just know what is going on with money, whether you're handling it perfectly or whether you're handling it exceptionally well, as long as you're working towards a future that you want to financially, even if you're behind the eight ball, just knowing where it is a stress reliever. Because financial independence or finance or money management is a really hard topic for people. And then the last thing is intimacy. And intimacy can come in a couple different forms. It can come in, you know, physical intimacy through sex. It can come through communication intimacy, where you're going to be deeper than just, you know, the normal stuff. It can be touch. It can be a lot of different things. You know, for us as a married couple, and for others married, you know, physical touch is a big part of this. And that's, if you're doing those three things well, then you can, like I said, you can walk through a lot of different challenges in life and kind of manage them together.
So I really think that these are a lot of the things that create those issues within a relationship. So I think we've all heard of other couples that struggle with their communication. Like, they don't feel seen or heard, or they don't feel that they're able to talk to their partner about their real feelings. And maybe they don't have those foundations of good communication set up. So that's a really important thing. And we've all heard of couples that can't get their money figured out. And it creates so many arguments and so much stress because they don't believe the same things about their money. Or one partner feels like the other one isn't really managing money well, and they're not having good proactive conversations. And then, of course, intimacy as well is a huge thing that can cause relationships to break apart. So those are, I think, kind of those common reasons for a relationship to end. And that's why we try to keep them top of mind all the time and keep them as things that we're always working on, because we know that the risk is there.
Yeah. I mean, that's a great way to think of it. Like the three-legged stool, you know, where if any one of those things is wobbly or is not present, the whole thing's going to fall over, you know, maybe not right away, but eventually it'll probably fall over, and, you know, whoever's sitting on it's going to come crashing down to the ground too. So, okay. So we have a good foundation in place. We have the three, you know, kind of pillars of a good, you know, relationship, in place, or at least now we know what goes into it. So we can kind of work on those things. But then there's going to be times when things go wrong. You know, life isn't perfect. Life is messy. It's inevitable that couples are going to disagree with each other from time to time. And, there's a ton of little things that could go wrong each day, splitting up the household chores all the way to bigger things like the finances, like you were talking about. The key is how you handle those, disagreements and the issues that pop up. What's some advice that you might be able to give on how to handle these disagreements and how to get back on track?
So I like this question, and sometimes I like to think about it even in a different direction. So what can we do to avoid arguments in the first place? And what are some of those intentional things that we can put in place that actually help relationships to keep moving forward and avoid that feeling of, oh, this thing's going wrong. Oh, this thing's making me crazy. Oh, my partner's not doing this, and I really need them to do it. That's one of the reasons that we started our podcast, is I think that if people think a little more proactively and put some intentional practices in place in their relationships, they can actually avoid a lot of those big blow-up arguments because they have communication opportunities built into their everyday. So there's two different intentional practices that we have really developed over our marriage and really recommend for other couples who might be struggling with their communication or just their relationship in general. The first one is what we call the ritual, which is just some sort of daily communication practice that's very ritualized. So ours is we always sit down to dinner together and we ask, how was your day? And it is a jumping off point for each person to share really openly whatever is important to them that day. So it could be a rundown of this is what I did today, or it could be a, you know, this is the one particular challenge I'm trying to work through and I'd actually really appreciate your perspective. Or, you know what, I didn't really have a good day and I need some support around that. So it opens that door for someone to feel seen and heard and for the other person to help them out as needed. Anything you'd like to add on the ritual?
Nope, you're doing great.
Okay. So some sort of daily communication practice so that with your spouse, you feel really connected on a regular basis. And I know that this can be a lot harder for people with children. We don't have any children. And I know that that adds so much more busyness and, you know, takes away a lot of your attention. But we know other couples that have this type of ritual maybe in the morning, before kids get up or over coffee, or they do it at night right before bed, just some sort of communication and connection practice. It's just really good to find that time that works in your schedule to make sure on an everyday basis you feel really connected. So that can really help to avoid things building up or someone feeling like they're unimportant, which can really lead to a lot of other problems in a relationship.
Yeah, I know my wife and I, you know, when, since you mentioned, you know, the issue, the complication of having kids in the mix, my wife and I have three kids. And when we have this kind of process where we talk with each other, it's usually after the kids have gone to bed, you know, at night. We put them down to bed and then, you know, for the next, you know, few hours, we're up and, you know, we have that time where we can talk with each other about, you know, what's going on during the day and things like that. And it really does help to have that kind of communication and keep that open. So that way, if there is an issue with something, it's not going to just build up and fester and become a bigger problem down the road. Which yes. A lot of times little things, you know, even little tiny issues could become big issues down the road when they start building up. It becomes that straw that breaks the camel's back and causes those bigger arguments.
Yes. So I think I love that idea of the right after kids go to bed. I think it's really important to take that time to like maybe mute the TV, turn it off for a few minutes and have that face-to-face communication about what's going on. So that seems like it would be a really good time for a ritual.
Yeah, exactly. I think that's a great time to do it. And again, like you said, it really should fit in with what works with your schedule. You know, you might work opposite shifts or something like that. And there may only be a short amount of time that you're actually, you know, in the same place at the same time for on certain days or whatever. And it may not be possible to do it at the same time every single day. So do what works for you, you know, but make sure you make that a priority.
Yep. And there was another couple that we were introduced to that has another more radical practice that they do every week instead of every day because their lifestyle is a little more hectic than a lot of us from a travel side. And every weekend, this husband and wife on Sunday, they have a conversation that's centered around two things, which is, what did I do this week that you never want me to do again? And what did I do this week that you never want me to stop doing? So they're trying to condense it down into, you know, a couple individual things that we may have done with each other. And the whole concept here is that, you know, if I'm going to be with my partner for 30 years, I'd like to know about the things that I'm annoying them so I don't do them. And if I'm going to be with them for 30 years, I'd like to know about the things that they cherish and love so I can keep doing them.
Right.
And Sarah hates it.
I do hate that.
Because it's so radical. And no, I think it's so tough.
I hate it.
There's a toughness to it.
I hate it because the question, what do you never want me to do again? I would worry that I would start looking for those negative things throughout the week. I would, so that I had something to report to you on Sunday that I hated. And I prefer to kind of keep a positive mindset and put a lot more attention on things I like. So I don't want to, I personally don't want a practice that encourages me to find the negative. But I do think that a couple things about that that are great is that it is very ritualized. Again, so there are like set questions you're asking each other. And I know someone listening is going to be like, you sound like robots. Why would you ask the same question every day or the same question every week? Like, that seems like too much, or that seems really weird, like you're not having a natural romantic relationship. And I would just encourage you to try something, because you might find that it actually gives you some structure to start conversations you wouldn't have had otherwise. So having some sort of question that is your ritual question you ask each other, it can put you in the right mindset to start a serious conversation. So it's not just, you know, what are we having for dinner? We're actually, for us, the how is your day question is not something we throw away. It really triggers our attention to turn to the other person and listen in a very active way. So when Bud says to me, how was your day? I try to make sure I don't have distractions going. Sometimes I can do it while I'm cooking, and sometimes I'm like, you know what? I'm not paying enough attention to this interaction. So it's really important to me that, you know, I know that that question is our connection question, and I need to turn off everything else and really focus on you. So I do like something that's structured and more ritualistic.
Yeah. And it makes sense too, because it gives you that time also to sit down and be, like you said, to be intentional about the communication that you have, and know that, okay, this is our time together to talk about what's going on and help each other through, you know, maybe having a problem at work or, you know, whatever it is. And it also shows that you care too.
Yes.
You know, I actually care that, you know, maybe you're having a problem and there's maybe something I can do to help you out and work through this situation. Mm-hmm. So,
and I want to actively listen to what you have to say, because you're important. Right. Yes, totally.
Exactly. Yeah. Not while you're, you know, driving home from work and talking on the phone while you're dealing with the jerk who just cut you off. And,
you know,
you're not really paying that close attention at that point. But if you can just sit down and have it doesn't even have to be long. It could be a 5-10 minute conversation and you can probably do most of, you know, what you need to do in that short amount of time.
Yeah, I agree. I would say our conversations usually don't go more than 5 or 10 minutes in the back and forth.
The mind can only take what the ass can endure.
I like that.
Yeah. So it doesn't have to be long. Sometimes it does drag out if we've got a big issue to work out together, but at least it's given us a platform to do that.
Right.
Before we move on from intentional practices, I'd love to talk about the second intentional thing that we do to make sure to work on our communication. And again, this is very structured and intentional, but we do something that's called a monthly life planning dinner. And this actually evolved for us. We used to do annual goal setting and a monthly goal review together, which is a little intense, but you know,
Sarah needed it.
It was a little intense, and I didn't necessarily like having Bud as my accountability partner because I felt like he was being my boss. That's a separate topic that we did talk about a lot in our episode about life planning dinner. But the Cliff Notes version is what we've evolved into is life planning dinner is our monthly intentional opportunity to go through a few key things. We always do gratitude for the month, like something great that happened, thank each other for it, and just notice and recognize those good things. And then we always do a review of our budget. So we're really big on money transparency and creating a platform for money conversations. But we also recognize that talking about money just like on a random weeknight, if you're having big issues, nobody wants to do that. Nobody wants to dump that on their partner. And I think a lot of times that's why we don't have money conversations, is we don't know when to have them. Like, when is your partner in the right mindset to talk about this really hard thing? So that's why we always wrap a budget and money conversation into life planning dinner, because we both know it's coming and we're both mentally prepared to have that conversation. So how are we doing with savings? How are we doing with income and expenses? That's all part of life planning dinner. And then we do a little bit of a goal review, or just talk about kind of what we'd like to accomplish that month. So we can, again, make sure we're connecting with what's important to us and to our partner and working together toward a vision for the future. Did I forget anything?
Nope.
So yeah, life planning dinner.
You know, a lot of this, you know, from the outside looking in to some of these things, and sort of like the couple that you're talking about, it seems somewhat transactional to maybe an outsider. But
yes,
I think at the same time it's not really, because you're being intentional about your relationship, and you're not just kind of coasting through and just letting life happen to you and then all of a sudden finding out, oh crap, we have no money in the bank because we spent it all on all this nonsense that we didn't need, and all those trips that we took that we didn't need to go on, and everything else that might have gone on. And when you're intentional about it, when you sit down and you talk to each other and you actually care about what the other person has to say and listen, things tend to work themselves out. You can figure out what's going on in the other person's mind, and you can work through issues. If you both don't agree on something, which, I mean, I don't know a couple who agrees on everything, you know, I don't know that they exist. And if they do, God bless them, but I don't know that they exist. You know, but at least you'll know where the other person's coming from. So it's not like a surprise when something happens and they react one way. It's like, well, I knew they were going to do that because we already talked about this, you know?
Yes. So question for you, Scott, as we're talking about structure and intentionality and routine, are there elements of structure and routine to military life?
there definitely are. Most days are structured where, you know, you wake up at this time and you exercise at this time and you eat breakfast at this time. And then you, whatever your job is, you go and do your job for, you know, X amount of hours, and you eat lunch at this time, and then you move on, you continue your work day till, you know, the end of the day. And it's very structured,
yes,
you know, for the most part. And I believe a lot of people who are in the military kind of crave that structure when they get out, because you go from a day that's very much structured, where you can pretty much say at any given point in time, this is what I'm going to be doing and when I'm going to be doing it, you know, where I'm going to be at and everything like that. And then you get out and all of a sudden it's just like, do whatever the hell you want. You can, you know, you can come, you can go, you can do whatever, and no one's there really for accountability. And that's when things start to kind of fall apart, I think, in some cases.
So there's an overall arching theme that I think our process keeps coming back to, which is, you know, how are you building ritualized structure into your daily practice and your daily life to help you cope with the chaos that is life in general? Yeah. So, and I think for, you know, your listeners to take back, if they, especially if they're craving or come from, and you can see how successful the military is at getting difficult objectives done on a regular basis. And they do that by having a structure and a rhythm and a reason and a rhyme of how they go about it. You know, now when you're out of the military and you are craving or looking for that structure, you get to craft your own, mm-hmm. you know, so think about how you want to craft your own structure, how you want to start to build your own practices, how you want to start to, you know, create the world that you want to live in with the practices that you think or deem are successful or necessary or important to you. You know, for us, daily communication is important to us. You know, for others, it might be every couple of days, or it might be once a week, for some who are really good, you know, writers or instead of we're good verbalizers, especially me, I'm a horrible writer. You know, I have to do my best work or communication is through, you know, verbal language. So don't, you know, you're going to craft your, you know, strategy and your design and structure and rituals be open to how you want to put them together. And, you know, we're talking about practices that today with you that it's taken us 8 years to, you know, we do it one way and then we modify it and do it this way and then we tweak it again and do it that way. So, you know, go down that path, walk that path with us, you know, and you're okay to start at zero, or you're okay to start at, you know, year three and work your way through where you want to go or where you think you want to go.
Mm-hmm. And I would say that our veteran listeners are uniquely equipped to put this type of structure into their relationship. So I know it's not normal. You know, not everyone in the world has very intentional communication practices and different practices like this. But I think that it's really worthwhile. And, you know, having had that kind of structure before, you're uniquely equipped to do this. Yep. So don't write it off.
And I listened to a couple of your episodes, and I don't think you are particularly religious in the a way that you approach things. Is that still correct or correct?
Religion?
Yeah, like religion. Well, in the podcast.
Oh, in the podcast, we actually haven't covered religion too much in the podcast.
Okay. We don't either. We don't touch it at all.
Yeah.
But one of the things that's fascinating about...
Yeah, it's not necessarily intentional that we haven't covered it. It's just, it's one of those topics that hasn't come up.
Just hasn't come up. Okay.
Yeah.
So we don't cover it at all. But for a listener who may be religious or is going to mass or church on a regular basis, if you start paying attention, church, religion, all of them, they've all got rituals in there. And we don't look at that and say, well, that's transactional. We don't look at that and say that it's transactional at all. We look at it and say, this is touchy-feely, and this is love, spiritual, and this is spiritual, you know, but it's all ritualized, and it's all standardized, and it's, we do the same hymns in the same time, in the same way. We marry people year after year with the same parentheses.
The first Corinthians.
I mean, we do the same damn thing over and over again, but nobody says that's transactional. Everybody says that's spiritual and love. So, right. You know, I think that's, and I think we can take a lot of lessons from that, whether you're religious or not. You can take lessons from that. We are ritualistic human beings as by nature. That's just who we are by design.
Yeah.
So we're going to always be, it's in our DNA. We're always going to have some ritual that helps get us up in the morning and helps move us forward in this whole structure. So let's just feed it. Let's just use it to our advantage.
That makes a lot of sense. You know, and I think that probably could help some people kind of wrap their heads around that ritual and that, the transactional nature of it, you know, how it feels like it's just routine and, you know, how you go through all of that. But it does make sense, because if you make it a routine and you make it a habit that you do this routine, you're not going to miss those steps. You know, if it's just something that you talk about it, you know, on occasion, whenever you feel like it, then you're going to start to miss things. You know, and if you're not approaching it with some sort of intention, you're going to end up missing those conversations that might be really important.
Definitely.
So we mentioned finances earlier, and I know that's one of those things that people aren't supposed to talk about in polite company, right? There's
politics. We love talking about it.
We actually hit religion too. So we got religion and finances. So.
Politics is around the corner.
I know. We might as well just jump into politics too after this. So. But... but finances are definitely something you should talk about. And we kind of covered that a little bit. I know my wife and I talk about money all the time. We actually have a rule together that if anything is going to cost more than $20, you know, if you're going out to the store and it's like a unplanned purchase or whatever, we go and talk about it first. You know, other than, you know, the necessities like gas for the car, groceries, utilities, stuff like that. Generally speaking, we'll talk about it if it's going to be over $20. And it, again, that feels sort of somewhat transactional as well, but it serves as a good sanity check. So we're not spending like crazy on stuff we don't need.
Yes.
So how transparent do you think couples should be when it comes to money? I'm guessing separate bank accounts are not the best idea. So what are your thoughts on that? I don't want to put words into your mouth.
So this is something that we don't stand on a lot of, you know, pillars and say, this is exactly how you should do it. And this is one of them that we do. And for us, extreme transparency is the best remedy. And extreme change, so what's that look like? For us, it looks like same bank account, money into the same bank account, money out of the same bank account. And also monthly tracking and measuring and communication around how that money's moving.
Budgeting
particularly. So how, you know, other tactics that you want to use inside of that framework, you know, is it $20? Is it $500? Is it $5? It doesn't really matter to us, but what matters most is that the money's all going in the same place. The money's all coming out of the same place, and that you and your partner are looking at that money movement together. And what we noticed for ourselves is that we used to do the first two steps and then we missed the looking at the money movement together. And what would happen is that earlier in our relationship, it would be, I was the one who was tracking and measuring and looking at it.
Cause you actually like doing it.
So
I kind of put my hands up and was like, Bud likes doing the finances.
Some people love to do the dishes. I love to track our money. Everybody's got a chore that they love to do, you know, this is just my chore that I enjoy doing. So, but what was happening though was that I was tracking and measuring and then was not communicating to Sarah. So good example, like entertainment budget. We were burning through entertainment money of like going out to bars and restaurants and eating out at night. We were having a blast doing it. And like, we burned up our whole like first year marriage budget in like 90 days.
And I was like, it was bad.
Oh no. But I didn't have a platform.
But those 90 days were fun.
They were. But I didn't have a platform to like tell her or I had never done it before. So inevitably what happened were these passive aggressive comments. Was it like, oh, well, we're going out together to dinner again tonight?
And he'd be like, he's like, what do you want to do for dinner? I'm like, oh, let's go out for tacos again. And like, he would get all uncomfortable and mad at me. And I didn't know why, because we weren't having open communication. You know, I'd go and get a coffee and he'd be like, how many coffees have you gone out to this week? And I'm just like, I feel like I'm doing something wrong here, but I don't know what it is.
So as soon as we started bringing the finance discussion to the table on a monthly basis, for us, it's once a month. It became a different conversation. And what I ultimately learned was that by looking at it and hoarding the information and only knowing it exclusively for myself, then I came to live on a place called Mars. And Sarah, having none of the information and not even being gifted or seen or participating in any of the information flow, came to live on a place called Venus. And because of those two things, then I just saw the world completely differently than she did. And as soon as we started, you know, talking about this, we both became to live in a world called reality. And then we could manage it together.
Yeah. And communication is key, I think, in all aspects, but especially in finances. Because, you know, like you said, then if you're not communicating, you're going to end up with those passive aggressive comments. Oh, you're getting another coffee and, you know, all that kind of stuff.
Yes.
And that's not helpful to anybody, you know, but it happens, you know,
yeah.
So definitely opening up that communication and talking about the issues that you're experiencing. You know that you're trying to save up for something, but you keep spending money. It just doesn't work. That's just not how money works. You know, you can't keep spending if you're trying to save. So,
or one person can't feel like they're saving and they feel like the other person keeps spending.
Right.
You know, one thing that we did to avoid that problem, and I highly recommend this to all couples, especially newly married couples that are just first combining their finances, is to give each person in the relationship a small discretionary budget, or like, you know, a $20 bill, some cash, something.
We call
something.
It the shopping budget.
We call it the shopping budget, and it's a certain amount allocated to each of us.
It's equal.
Yes. Every single month, and we're allowed to spend that without judgment. So if I want to keep getting coffee, that now comes out of my shopping budget, because I could also make coffee for myself. And that's a choice that I'm making to have some fun on my own. If I want to save up for a new shirt or something that's going to cost I can save my shopping budget over months. Yep. If Bud wants to go on a golf trip with his buddies, he can save up over months for that in his shopping budget. And I don't say
my
anything about it.
My savings patterns are deeper than Sarah's. You know, she's just got to buy $2 coffee from Starbucks. And I'm like, oh, golf clubs.
Is that sarcasm?
Yes, it is sarcasm.
I'm creating the examples here, so they get to be my examples. But it's
these are
so
examples
nice.
On no. Venus.
Yes.
Hello. Welcome to my planet. But it's really nice to have money that you know you get to spend where someone doesn't make a passive aggressive comment about that another box just arrived on the front porch and what's that now and what did it cost? It's one of those things. We even had a conversation. What did I pick on you about recently? And you were like, it's my shopping budget. It doesn't matter.
You literally texted me about a new set of golf clubs that showed up.
Oh, that's right. The vintage golf clubs you wanted to have. I'm like, what are you going to do with those? And he goes, it doesn't matter to you. It was my shopping budget.
I sent her back a gift that's from this crazy guys at a golf store. It's like, we buy clubs.
And that was the end of the conversation.
There you
so
go.
That's a really helpful thing to have in any relationship. No matter what that monthly amount is, make sure that each partner has something they can spend without judgment and get some joy from without someone picking on them.
Oh. Awesome. So that makes a lot of sense with finances. And I think that's, this is actually going to lead into the next thing I kind of want to talk about, where you're working together to make sure that the finances are in order. You know, you're communicating, you're saving, and spendings are in line with each other's expectations and whatever your objectives are, if you're saving up for something. And so the next thing that I was going to talk about is, so in my mind, a marriage is kind of like a team sport, which isn't always perfect, right? If you use, let's say, baseball as kind of an example here, you have a pitcher and a catcher, right? The catcher relies on the pitcher to throw the ball, and the pitcher relies on the catcher to catch the ball. The best way for that to happen is if the pitcher throws a good pitch every single time. But every once in a while, the pitcher is obviously not going to throw a good pitch. Mm-hmm. He's going to throw a wild pitch. And it wouldn't do the team or, you know, the pitcher or the catcher any good if the catcher just threw his hands up and started bitching and moaning about the bad pitch.
Yeah.
His job is to catch the ball no matter how bad of a throw it is. And if you want to flip that around, it also doesn't do the team any good if the pitcher complains about how the catcher didn't catch the ball. They just need to kind of roll with it and do the best they can to help, you know, make up for the other person's shortcomings. So like a marriage, it requires both of them to work towards the same goal, support each other in the process. Kind of a long-winded way to get to the question I had for you, but the question I guess is, you know, what should couples do to change their mindset from playing an individual sport like golf, for example, to a team sport like baseball? Or maybe baseball's not even the best analogy here. Maybe doubles and tennis or something like that is a better example. But what's the best way that couples can, you know, maybe change their mindset, to become more of a team player?
I really like this question because I started thinking about, okay, well, how is marriage different than an actual sport? And I want you to imagine a world where baseball didn't really have any set rules. You kind of got to make them up. And also there was no way to measure your success. So there wasn't any scoring. There wasn't any playoffs. It would be really hard to know if you were doing a good job or not. And unfortunately, marriage is a lot that way, where there isn't really, like, you know, I guess your only goal is stay together through all things, which...
Stick it out.
Yeah, I mean, which sounds terrible. So I think that the way that sports can actually show us how marriage can be more successful is thinking about the fact that in a sport, there are some guidelines, and there is something that the team is working toward together. So I definitely think marriages do best when couples take the time to get on the same page about where they're going in the future. What do they want life to look like 5, 10, 15 years from now? Have you had a conversation about that so that you guys can talk about that together? Again, that's something that we've done intentionally. So we actually did a 15-year vision. Like, what would be awesome if we were able to accomplish 15 years after we got married? And do we agree on what that looks like, or do we not? And we can talk through that a little bit. You know, if I said, well, my dream is that we're retired 15 years from now, and Bud's like, I'm never stopping working, then we have some conversations that we need to have. And I think that a lot of couples in marriage, they just go day to day, just trying to make it through the day, as opposed to being on a team and working toward a future together. Agree?
Some people call it a dream conversation. You know, we call it visioning, where you're going to go through and actually write out, you know, it writes out, when you do it, you write out, you know, where you want to be in 5, 10, 15, 20 years, each increment, as many of them as you want. And this is the fun part of where it's like, what do you see? What are you doing? What's it smell like? What's it taste like? So that it's more than just like, I'm doing this and I'm doing that. It's like, how do you feel actually? And I think that when we did this, and when we see others do it, it changes somebody's mindset too, that my win is Sarah's win, and Sarah's win is my win too, because we're both actively working towards whatever that vision statement is. Mm-hmm. You know, because we've got our own individual vision statement, we've got our family vision, and we've got a family vision statement for the two of us. So though every collective, you know, effort, a minute and an hour of effort that we put in every day towards that, you know, is something that I know I'm winning. And if, even if I have a bad day, or if I'm not doing the best, she's winning. So I get to have a win in that sense as well.
Yeah. I mean, it makes, the analogy makes sense too, when you think about it, like a sport, you know, when the pitcher has a great game and, you know, has a no hitter or something like that, the team makes out for it. You know, yep. You can have the worst players on the field, and if the pitcher is, you know, doing good, or not the worst players on the field, but you can have, you know, players who are not having their best day. But if the pitcher is, you know, having a on day, everybody wins. And, yep. And so you kind of feed off of each other, help each other out, and make the best of, you know, whatever is thrown your way. So it's really, really a great example. And I like how you guys kind of phrase that and mash that together.
You're too kind.
So it looks like we're actually over time already. Uh-oh. But that's okay. I've really enjoyed this conversation, and I really do want to thank the two of you for being on the show. I do think it's a really important topic, so I'm glad that we had the time to kind of chat about it and talk about some of these best practices, maybe, if you want to put them that way, for relationships and marriages. It's, you know, really an important thing to talk about. But you guys do have the Confident Couples podcast, and I do want to let people know about that. And if you wouldn't mind letting people know where to find more about you two and the podcast, and where they can listen to it.
I always mess this part up, so.
So I'll take it. I update the website.
Nope, no pressure.
So all of our episodes are available at budandsarah.com. So that's budandsarah.com. And the podcast is available on anywhere you listen to podcasts, including Spotify, Apple Podcasts, Google. So we've talked about so many things in the last half hour that we have full episodes about, and they're not like super long and crazy. Our episodes are 20 to 30 minutes, and we go in depth on topics like the daily ritual, life planning dinner, fighting fair, budgeting and money, the shopping budget. There's episodes on all of those things. So if anything here piqued anybody's interest, go and do a little search on budandsarah.com, and you might be able to find some more in-depth information.
And I will definitely have links to all of this in the show notes, so that if you're looking to get more advice on relationships and want to listen to the podcast, you can go ahead and check out the show notes and link over to their show from there. So thank you again, Bud and Sarah. I really, really enjoyed this conversation.
We did. Thanks, too. We had a thank you, too. Scott.
Thanks for listening to the Drive On Podcast. If you want to check out more episodes or learn more about the show, you can visit our website, driveonpodcast.com. We're on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram at Drive On Podcast.